So today we're going to talk about moat analysis and
Grace. What is a moat?
What do you think on this topic? Share with us. What was your observation? Like, why do we want to like focus on this topic for today?
Okay, good question. So if you realize to our audience watching, we actually started our NOTG Telegram community channel last week. So we announced it last week. We have about over 200 members in our Telegram chat.
Wow, let's give everyone a round of applause. Thank you for participating.
Yeah. So thanks for joining us on the community chat. I saw Melvin, you also answer sometimes in the middle of night, you're answering some questions there as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
you cannot sleep at night.
Yeah. So one thing that we want to do this year is be a lot more intentional to connect with our audience. So I've been, you know, keeping track of what are some of the things that people are saying in the chat. Yeah. So there are a lot of questions on when you want to buy, let's say in terms of trends, for example, what to buy. I think so they're asking about certain layouts, they're asking about the age, the lease of the project, at certain layouts, can I still buy or should I look into it? So I was thinking, okay, because we have this moat analysis framework to guide us in terms of, you know, what are some of the qualities of a project and a particular unit to look at, right? I think mainly projects to look at. So I wanted to explore whether these 10 factors that we've come up with, they endure the test of time.
Mm.
Yeah, meaning that across time, some of these, you know, factors that we have, such as density effect, maybe last time people would prefer, let's say, for example, less dense. Now they want more dense. So does it endure the test of time? That's something that I'm curious about. So I wanted to chat about the moat analysis in this episode.
Okay, awesome. We also did a webinar, right, Yurong and George, on talking about moat analysis. I remember that topic was about seven analytical factors
to find the right property to invest.
Right. Yeah. And then I think you all went through in depth on the moat analysis. So today, I think we can go like broad base plus in depth as well. Then we talk about some case studies. Yes. I think that would be very awesome for our audience. Okay, I want to share with everybody how this whole thing evolved about. I was just running through my Apple notes and then I realized in the past, this was like the banter notes I had together with our CTO Marcus. And then I think this, if I remember correctly, moat analysis was the very first framework that PRB invented. So back then, if you notice, this was the first graphic that I asked our graphic team to came out with. It's like a logo.
Actually quite nice, eh?
Real estate moat analysis. And there's like property insights, investment analysis. So this whole thing will remove. Okay, how this thing came about was because back then we were trying to think about, is there like a ranking method for condos in Singapore?
Mm.
And the perspective is that if somebody wants to buy a condominium, how can we have like an, firstly, like a very simple ranking method, but then that evolved into like, why don't we make it automated? Why don't we use like data, API, make it a little bit more scientific driven, see in terms of automation, how much can we push the boundary of it? So actually in the past, if you look at this, this was the ranking method. We have our own moat analysis. It was like a worksheet. And then we rank, you know, if the property has less than 50 units, it's 1 point.
It's own self-key, right?
Yeah. So it's like a ranking based on certain attributes that then translated into the current system that we have, which is an API fed and data driven method right here. So we have populated all the condominiums projects in Singapore into this entire system here. And then there's an automated moat score. Of course, the moat score changes and is being updated on a quarterly basis. And later we're going to lock into the actual system as well to look at behind the scenes how you function and how it works. Okay, but coming back to this, just now I think Grace was saying that why don't we share with our audience how this name moat came about.
Yeah.
It actually happened because when I brought my kids to Osaka.
Oh, the Osaka Castle.
Yeah, then we went to the Osaka Castle. Walking into the Osaka Castle is super tiring. It's a long walk inside. And when walking, I realized there's a moat. It's like a water body.
You go in the day or night?
I went in the day.
Oh, lucky you go in the day.
Carrying, like my kids lah. And then I just realized, wow, by the time we went in, my legs are already so tired carrying the kids, right? The water body, in terms of the depth of the water body, will then give people an idea about how well protected this castle is.
Yeah.
So if it's deeper, it's harder for the enemy to attack. If it's like narrower, it's easier to attack. So then it gave me an ideation. Why don't we create this thing called moat analysis? And of course, this name is not new. It's been coined by Warren Buffett For the longest time, he wants to find companies with a thicker moat so that these companies have like a self-protection kind of USP.
Basically, from Warren Buffett's point of view, is that like if a company's moat is very high, the barrier of entry for competitors coming is very high.
Yeah.
So hence, it will preserve its revenue and profits, and hence, the long-term wise, companies with stronger moat will actually have better gains for investors. And so that's how we also use this moat analysis from like the Kassa angle as well as from Warren Buffett angle.
Yes, yes. Which is why when I wanted to trademark this name called moat analysis, it was very difficult because the name moat technically sort of like is already coined by Warren Buffett for a long time. But if you look at this, we're very thankful now if you just key in moat analysis, I think the first couple of articles all belongs to PLB.
Yeah.
Right? So we have like our videos and everything. So if you want to read up more about it, it can be done. So just now, coming back to Grace, as you are talking about the timelessness, right? I was just thinking, even for water bodies, they will dry up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think even when we created this system, we also need to constantly update it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because things will change. Economy will change. So today, let's talk about every single point.
Mm.
Yeah. And then who wants to kickstart? Which one do you want to talk about?
I think going to kickstart is one very important thing is that, like, of course, we have three distinct segments, right? HDB,
yes,
condos and apartments, as well as landed property.
Yes.
I think something that I observe is that, like, of course, individually, they have their own property price index.
Yes.
So I always share a few things. Number one, if you look at the HDB property price index, if it goes up, means generically, all HDB prices will actually go up. Why? It's because actually HDB is a very homogeneous kind of product. So there isn't a huge differentiation with regards to, you know, like the product itself, right? So hence the pricing goes up quite together, or it comes down quite together. Same thing for landed property, but landed property ratio is because, right, of the limited stock, 73,000 units. So hence generally, if let's say, you know, like it is time for a landed market to move, everything will move. But interestingly, in the condo apartment segment, we realize that even though when the property price goes up or it goes down, the amount of properties behavior in terms of price movement individually, right, there is a huge distribution. And that's the reason why moat analysis, right, become very, very, very important for like the private condo apartment kind of segment.
Mm.
And that's where we know we are able to use this to have a very high level picture of qualifying good investment projects to even consider first for our clients. And that really save up a lot of opportunity costs through all this like manual computation. Okay. Okay. Kickstart officially.
Okay. I also want to add on something. Yeah. So like my thoughts is that why I wanted to explore this topic, right? And I thought it's very interesting is because, you know, let's say if you build a good moat, let's say for a castle, right? The point of the moat is to protect against certain during war times, ma, if you're under attack. So technically, if you look at this in the condo context or project context, it means that you should be able to, because you use the moat analysis framework to select a particular project, that means at a time when you want to exit, right, because you have considered all these factors, you will still be able to exit regardless of market conditions.
Mm.
That's what defines a good moat. Because if now we're saying that, actually, this is a moat, this is the moat analysis framework that we've come up with to help our clients select properties, but it is subject to like certain economic conditions and all that, then or subject to buyer psychology at certain points in time, then I question whether it's really a moat analysis framework, because the true test of a moat is that you must be able to endure good and bad times.
Mm.
That even in a time where buyers are more cautious, you are still maybe the preferred.
And you can still sell.
Yeah, project. Yes, you can still sell.
Which means that will your castle look desirable in the eyes of the buyer? So we're going to sell the whole castle, right? When people come and view this castle, do I want to buy or not? Like, is it well protected, right?
Yeah. So that means like, even in different times with, you know, buyer sentiments changing, whether you are still,
Okay, if I come to look at a castle, but the river dries up, or maybe like the protective defense is low.
No. It's more of whether, can I attack you or not? Can I attack you or not?
We're going into medieval times.
Right? Yeah. Whether your castle will be attacked.
Yeah.
Or whether that throughout, no matter what happens, you are still protected because you have used the moat framework.
I think in short, it's just to see whether it can sustain any shock in terms of economic situation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So anyway.
Thank you, John, for summarizing.
Okay. So a lot of our clients always ask, right? MOAT, does it stand for anything?
No.
Yeah.
So M is for McDonald's.
I was thinking, okay, M
Melvin
can be make money. O can be opportunity for,
Did
upgrading.
Do you just ask ChatGPT?
No, I just thought of it. A can be attract potential buyers, and T will be test of time.
Time is serious.
Yeah. Time is serious. Okay, can. Okay, awesome. But anyway, it doesn't stand for anything. It stands for the moat around a castle.
Okay, can.
Okay, so just.
Okay, actually, last time we had a lot more pointers like volume effect, contingency rental,
on block potential, US, also.
Yeah, on block potential. And we even have the landed noise mode level analysis. So we actually have a landed mode analysis, but we didn't have time to build it. So basically, Lander is still very manual.
Can you scroll back to your previous Apple Note? What is that hand?
Ah, okay, okay. This one is a framework that I used to teach the guys when they were new. This one is, okay, so I taught them this. Basically, if you cannot remember the mode analysis, if you want to buy a property, or let's say you're advising a client,
let
right?
Let me read your palm.
Location, PSF, entry price, quantum entry price, whether growth potential and can exit or not. So
you know what that is? Remind me of.
I think you need some moisturizer.
Okay, and then there's also like a expansion where it's like mind map.
Wow, you really need moisturizer.
Schools. Hey, I lost this bangle by the way. Shucks. Okay. Schools, MRT, project size, developer. It's all linked to location. PSF. Look at the micro factors. Quantum also. Then here, GRS BTO. Yeah, so that was during one of our trainings last time at back at Vertex. Okay, come. Who wants to kickstart the first one?
So maybe I'll share first.
Okay, which one? Share with us the
No, maybe I share a case study first.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, I just met a client two nights ago. So this client right now, he first purchased his property at about 6 to 7 years ago. Okay. So back then, there isn't any frameworks like this. So I think this also stems to the fact that how we can really select a property with as many checkpoints as possible so that it also helps with the speed of exit, which also translates to the opportunity cost. So this particular client, when I had a chat with him, he purchased this one beta in core central area. So this project called LTES.
LTES, nice.
Back then, he had to rely heavily on the information that's been given to him by the agent. That there isn't any information that was transparent and stuff like that. So that he bought into LTES. Why? Because he didn't know any information and he think, hey, downtown core, you know, is in the core central area. You'll be very good. They can buy and then can still exit, blah, blah, blah. So and so forth with all the white sites. At around the area, so then he buy. Till date, the valuation has not gone up. And then in fact, he is selling at one of the lowest price. And when I deep dive a little bit using the mode analysis framework, I realized there's a lot of issues that we can nitpick on.
Okay.
So I think that is the context that we want to give. So I think with that, right, we also want to see what could potentially be the issue in terms of exiting. I think number one, I want to talk about the quantum effect because that one beta is at a very good size with loft, 800 over square feet. So in today's context, 800 over square feet, right? You can squeeze in a three beta OCR. But right now, if you're looking at CCR, if you compare at the same location, one beta is at about 400 square feet, 400 odd square feet. You can find something at one beta. And typically smaller size, the overall quantum will also be lower. So I think this was the information that was lacking. So volume effect is definitely one. And then I think for this case, the rental demand is very strong because in fact, this particular unit right now, you are still having a positive cash flow of about $1,200 on a monthly basis. So definitely very good in terms of the rental play. So what we want to take a look at in terms of the mode analysis, I think it rightfully pointed out in terms of the rental demand, but in terms of the quantum effect, you know, it solely lacks. And then right now, what we are looking at is at a score of 54%. Maybe later we can touch a little bit in terms of roughly what do we think the score is. Of course, in CCR area, your things like your parents' attraction effect would definitely not be there because this is of a different type of product. But it lacks the volume, it lacks the quantum effect, and then it lacks the exit audience as well because one beta wouldn't be too many in terms of the supply in the CCR area. So I think having this lack of information, it affected the purchase decision, which right now affected the speed of the sale, which also translates to opportunity cost to move into another potentially asset that can perform better.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the context.
829 square feet is how many beta now?
One beta loft.
No, this is a one beta loft in LTES.
Yeah. one bedder loft.
527 is a normal one bedder. 603 is a normal one bedder.
But one bedder loft means that the actual... How much is the loft?
I don't know.
There's air space. The renter is strong.
Very strong.
The PSF now, I think, is back at the days when it was launched.
Yes.
There's really very little transaction. Profitable, 21. Non-profitable. That means in total is 61 transaction.
How big is the project?
Project size 280. Something to take note is also of like things like this. I mean, like when there are certain projects that take like 8 years to construct and things. But of course, sometimes in CBD, there's restriction in terms of the speed. And sometimes they need to tear down the building. It's on block and stuff. So it will take longer.
Yeah.
I think I put it in the context that, of course, you know, like I think when it comes to like a CBD area, when you enter the right project at the right seasonality, it is a good investment. So for example, if you pull out Icon or if you pull out like the sale, right? So you will see very, very profitable transactions at the correct season of time.
And the correct stack as well.
Stack the stack is more like the view premium lah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, I think one thing to leverage on what Yuron just said is to look at in 2008, when Altus was being launched, what other projects are being launched?
There are a lot, because actually in 2007, 2008, CCR prices have went to a whole new peak.
There's a whole new
because
hype,
of
right?
Because of the hot money and the disparity between CCR and RCR, it is such a big gap if you look at like in terms of the property price index, right? That is one of the reasons why, let's say in CBD, a lot of times when you see the prices now, we are still quite in similar to the 07, 08 prices. But this year, actually, CBD is going to be quite exciting. So at the right project, right entry price, there is a lot of value proposition to be found in the CBD zoning.
Because now the PSF makes sense, ma. If you look at Altus. I mean, now compared to other places, I mean, compared to other new launches, 1,009 is a reasonable
entry
price.
But the overall concern wouldn't be,
too high. CCI is always, right now, the PSF will always look attractive. So it's just about a matter of right the specific unit you're getting into, whether like what George mentioned, does the quantum balloon in a way that actually it looks very attractive on PSF, but it might not be as affordable because there are alternate choices.
Yep.
At that same quantum, you know, people can find like a slightly like, you know, like bigger unit.
I think one thing that we notice also about CBD projects is that when you want to exit, the amount of people that is hunting for CBD properties is not like in the past.
Yep. Correct.
Yeah. Last time there was a lot of I think foreign investors before the ABSD, they were super active in CBD, the sale, MBS and all that. So of course now it's different, which is why there was a trend of like shifting into the OCR, RCR district, because it's mainly home buyers, Singaporeans, a lot of upgraders. Yeah, so there was that shifting trend, I think after 2013, 2014, when all the ABSC started coming in, the couple of rounds.
But actually from this year onwards, right, actually you will start to see a lot more activity in the CBD area again. Rationale is because now, right project, right unit, the PSF is just very, very attractive with upcoming CBD incentive scheme that is going to rejuvenize the whole landscape, where, you know, like in certain spots, government is incentivizing building owners that if, let's say, they were to tear down a building because there's a lesser requirement of needing commercial space because we're trying to decentralize. Right? So they want to change to a more work, live, play kind of environment. So if you can adhere, you're in the right zoning, you can adhere to that, you can get 20% more gross space to build. We have a lot of, I'll say generally what I think like some resale CBD projects are quite interesting to look at coming year.
Name a few.
Beyond Shenton, for example.
Resale ones.
Beyond Shenton now is like, if you find the right unit, $2,000 PSF, right? And just opposite Skywaters going to launch in first quarter, freehold property. There was an article that mentioned it's going to be 5,000 PSF and above. Opposite Marina View, 900 plus unit project launch is going to start this year. So at the high floor for, I think, Marina View, it should hit 3.5 PSF or more. So you see a very good disparity to the new launches, leasehold, new launches, freehold. And so like, as long as, you know, like the units can establish good sales, there will be momentum to attract the eyeballs back.
To the resale one.
To the resale market.
So you're referring to the resale projects.
Yes.
Okay, understand.
I mean, I was just thinking that with the new, because the decentralization will take time. right now we are seeing that the OCR, there's a lot more work injected, but for the CCR, to inject play, yes, but to inject live, I think that will still be a couple of years, especially because the new upcoming projects will still take time.
That's why the resale projects are going to be interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it always depends what is the gap between the new launch pricing as well as the resale pricing. As far as we have seen last year, in terms of new launch pricing, some of the projects did launch at a pretty high PSF. And then, you know, the market uptake also was like pretty tapered for the newer projects. So, I also do not know whether I agree or not that it will bring back more rejuvenation into D2. Maybe yes, maybe no, but yeah, we will have to see.
Mm. I think as a developer's point of view is that if we look at this CBD zone as a product category, if for example, any one of us, let's say is a developer, we want to launch a building, the first thing that they will definitely do is they will do market study on the demographics, right? So I think naturally, because of a lack of schools, then probably the units that they will craft is always like one bed, one plus study, two bedders, in order to cater to young couples that wants to live in CBD.
Has to rent out also, to rent out.
Yeah, so like three bedders, naturally they will try to create lesser. And families with like school going kids, I think naturally they will stick to the 10 and 11 for good schools.
10 and 11.
So that's why I think constantly projects in the past that has probably a higher distribution of bigger units, they will then find that when they want to find a buyer, it takes a little bit more time. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, but also the new projects that are launching at D2, the size is very, very small. Mm. So probably like 400, 500 as what George mentioned. So if the quantum is roughly the same and you are getting, you know, let's say if you were to buy into the resale one at a bigger size, then maybe like what Yurong says, there will be renewed attention to these units.
I really think it's a function of the quantum pricing, right? So for example, I think if you are going for like the onsen three-bedder, four-bedder unit, primarily people who want to stay in the central area, right? They actually like bigger floor plates unit because it's for own enjoyment. So hence, you know, like the quantum that they're willing to spend is definitely more, will be higher. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that will be interesting is who will be that profile? Yes, CBD doesn't have 1 kilometer, 2 kilometer of good schools.
Yep.
So hence, people who come in, they are like at two different stages of life. Number one, high-level professional, young people, bachelor, young couple. And they really want the convenience, right? The ability to walk to their workplace.
Mm.
You can get to MRT. So now you have like 5 lines, MRT color code. If you are in the right building, all within like, you know, like 5 to 7 minutes.
Yep.
And some of them are actually sheltered.
Yeah,
and so that is very, very interesting for people who want that kind of like, you want to save time. That's why you want to be in the CBD. You are holding a job, financial services, and your office is just, you know, like 1 or 2 buildings away.
Mm.
So it makes sense because time is money and time is serious.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the next thing will be the other phase, right, where they are out of the primary school kids going phase and they no longer need that proximity to the school level.
Yeah.
And right now they just want to have that balance between, okay, I want to have easier access to my workplace and I also want to, you know, like have that to let my kids take public transport and then they can just get wherever that they want to. Then it makes sense.
Mm.
But of course, primary school going kids that phase, probably not the main target audience for own stay. But if let's say you're going for 1 and 2 bedders in CBD, then it's very important to like what George mentioned, right? The quantum sensitivity must be there.
Mm.
And I see, of course, like with the new launches, 1 bedder that is being launched like right at the end of Singapore, $1 million. A similar price point, top up a little bit, you can get a good 1 bedder in CBD area, right smack.
Which you can rent out.
Your yield will be higher, low vacancy rates. Yeah, so I think really there's opportunities.
You got more expectations. Actually, if I'm a single, I will consider buying CBD. We sold actually a couple of units at Altest before. The 2 bedder duplex penthouses, these kind of units are not in production anymore because you have like, of course you look at a couple of listings on the public portals. Now, especially with the new harmonization rule, developers will not be incentivized to create things like this anymore.
Yeah, so it's going to be rare.
Yeah, so it's going to be like a really like a duplex kind of living. Actually, now if you look at this quantum, it's sort of like actually quite okay, right? 2.45, 1.84 looks quite okay. Of course, this layout doesn't allow you to create a third bedroom, but I think it's it sort of start to make sense.
So talking about layouts, right? Do you think developers should go for, like, let's say now, if they are releasing new launches in the market, right? In the CCR area, should they go for more efficient layouts? Means keep it small, keep the quantum low, go for a really efficient layout, like what we saw in TMW Maxwell. Mm. They did their flip switch product, which is a very small unit. They try to keep the quantum as minimal as possible for a smaller unit type, right? Versus, let's say, some of the older ones, they are, I would say, bigger. They have loft space and all that. So it appeals more to those who are, I would say, like, wants a balance between convenience, but also like luxury of living in CBD. So which one do you think will perform better today?
I think these are two very different, distinct cluster, right? So if let's say like, one and two beta investment centric. So that's where, like, you know, like projects like Icon was meant to be. And at a point of time when they launched, it did really well because the quantum was so attractive that it was a no-brainer to enter.
Mm.
This will be easy to rent up, right? So you cannot have like a mixture within a project. You have to decide whether, you know, you're appealing to investors or you are really appealing to own stayers. I would say go for a big floor plate, nice floor to ceiling height, and private lift. You want it to be like a 1,500 square foot for at least like a three bedder. This will be interesting. Like, you want to have the lux feel to attract that big quantum money, you must give what they know, like these people what they want. Like, it's like going to be private lift, good concierge, nice lobby to enter. If you have like the bandwidth to allow for like no more than one car kind of parking, because people who like, they might have 2-3 cars, like, you know, like some supercars, and then they need that parking lot.
Let me wrap back to George. Right? George, as whatever you want to share, continue. Okay. But let's route back to this whole topic, right? Before we deviate away. Okay. Which part of that mood analysis applies to what you just shared for audience? I mean, on L-Test. Okay. Because L-Test in the past, when it was launched in 08-09, maybe back then the quantum looks big, right? But it still caters. It's still a project that a lot of people purchase, right?
Correct.
And of course, through the years, there were so many cooling measures. Now, it seems like the PSF makes sense on the PSF level. Quantum also, I think, starts to make a little bit more sense in the overall context of things. So, but what do you think attributed to its sort of like lackluster kind of performance? Is it a quantum effect? Is it like the parents' attraction effect? What do you think?
I think there's two ways to look at it. When, let's say, you know, this particular product is being marketed to an individual or to a consumer, they can pin a very beautiful picture and say, hey, look, it's very strong rental in the area, which really checks the box. It's right beside the MRT. Back then, maybe, you know, they're talking about location, and then it's right at the central core. So, hey, it's a good buy. But then if we take a look at a wider perspective, then we will have to start to realize that at this price quantum that I'm entering at 1.7, are there better options in and around the area? And then if, let's say, my holding period is going to be 3 to 5 years later, taking into consideration of the economic factors, who will then likely be the potential exit audience buyer that wants to buy into my project? And then let's say 5 years later, if I want to sell, who will then likely be the competitors? Are there any potential plots that is going to be launched as a GLS land plot that will potentially fight with my, you know, with my property? So I think if they just look at this aspect, rental demand MRT effect is something that really checked the boxes. But then the quantum effect, the region disparity effect, the audience, exit audience effects are something that would not really take into consideration. And hence, you know, the results.
I think on climate-wise, that wasn't captured in the mood analysis is like very simple. Like last time, before the global financial crisis, all these high flyer expatriates that come to Singapore, they actually have a housing package allowance. They can have an X amount of dollars to spend on their rental over here. Usually, sometimes it goes under the company lease. So these people who are staying here, they don't need to pay for the rental, but they want something that is convenient. So it is very, there was, you know, like this rental demand for CBD. Hence, when the rental demand is there, naturally, you know, like your pricing demand will be good because from an investment angle, it's correlated as a, you know, like as a, almost like a one-to-one. The other thing to look at is after global financial crisis, basically a lot of companies cut their budget. So housing allowances are only given to like really your high level C-suites, right? And the rest, they will say, okay, I can support a little bit up to a budget, but it's all under personal lease. And hence, when it's all under personal lease, now when money has to be co-shared from a tenant, comes from own pocket, they become like, oh, maybe it makes sense for me to stay, you know, like a few stops away from CBD. And you know, I had the best bang on my buck, especially, you know, like when first year they come in, they don't know anybody, they want to go for a studio or one beta. after 2 years here, they make some friends and say, hey, your rent expiring, my rent expiring, we can click. Why not we co-share now a 2 or 3 beta?
Right.
And then, you know, further away. Yeah, and then we can pocket the allowance from the company.
That's why after Lehman Brothers, you see that trend of a lot of expatriates starting staying
RCR.
At RCR.
Yep,
yeah. Right. So for example, like even D14, Geylang, Aljunied, there's a lot of expatriates actually renting a 3 beta, because their actual conversation on the ground is that I pay a 1 beta inside CBD, yeah. I can pay for a 3 beta.
That's why nowadays, right, they say that when we look at the old adage, location. Mm. Sometimes location is not really about the macro location anymore. Meaning it's not about district location, but actually location changes to mean your proximity to MRT. Right. That's what they say. Because as the time changes and as there's more and more MRT stations, location becomes how close you are to the MRT instead of where you are in the entire Singapore. Mm.
How close you are to MRT? Whether your MRT has an interchange line and at what line. Mm. So of course, you know, there are like the main lines and there are the supporting lines.
Yeah. And this is reflected in the new HDB scheme, right? Because of the
Prime Plus.
Yeah. And the policies reflect that MRT is becoming an increasingly important thing that most people are looking for.
Yeah. Which is very, very interesting. Last time when I was young, I'll be exposing my age, right? So that time there was only green and red line. And like from my house, if I walk very quickly, it takes me 15 minutes to Tiong Bahru MRT station. And to me, that is considered great, you know, because it's like 15 minutes can walk MRT. It's like, to me, it's like fantastic. And then after that, when I started real estate, okay, 10 minutes is like the cutoff point. And nowadays, 5 minutes, a bit far, they are looking at integrated project, looking at shelter walkway. Got shelter walkway to MRT, 3 minutes MRT station.
Yeah, this thing called a sweat factor.
You know why? Because now time is serious.
Yeah, sweat factor. Don't sweat, that means it's walking distance.
Okay. Very nice. Global warming getting hotter.
Sweat,
Yeah.
sweat factor.
Change the MRT effect to sweat factor. One thing that I want to highlight for our MRT effect, right, is that if I'm not wrong, the team that built
is our criteria.
It's based on like the radius, lah. It's not.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because last time I got feedback that if the MRT is an interchange, it should have an additional point.
Yes. Oh, like 6 points.
No, and
integrated.
And not all MRTs are equal.
Yes. Which,
right.
Which line,
like, let's say Jurong MRT is not the same as Orchard MRT, for example. You know, so it matters. What? It cannot just be if I'm close to MRT. It's whether the MRT is, for example, like what you mentioned, an interchange, and whether it is a more central MRT.
Is it a better line, is it?
Yeah, my favorite line is green line, then followed by red line.
My favorite line is the Thompson East Coast line.
Yeah.
But now,
because that's the MRT that's going to come to your house, man.
No, that means the line's now got biases already, man.
Yes.
Like, I think it really depends on
which line is a better line.
It really depends on individual. If
that
particular individual is working at Tuas or Jurong, they will love the green line.
Yes.
They won't love the northeast line. So I think it's really subjective.
I think the plus one point can be given to integrated developments. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
you mean interchange?
Yeah, that means
two lines minimum.
Or maybe it is an integrated. Maybe integrated can be planted somewhere else if it's a, because there's only less than 6% of properties are integrated. Right. Okay, good point. Okay, let's move on to the next one. So who wants to take on the next effect? Anyone else?
You heard about the volume effect?
He's the creator.
Yeah, I love to talk about the volume effect.
Okay.
Because I feel that it's just so closely tied with the way bankers value our properties that you just can't run too far from it.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why I feel that, okay, a volume effect is something that I would feel pretty much is able to withstand the test of time.
Right.
Yeah, because, okay, not saying that boutique projects are not good. There are boutique projects that perform very well as well. But due to the way that bankers in Singapore value projects, right, it just makes a lot of sense to be in a project that is at least 300 to 400 units and above. Nah.
I have 2 points to add.
Mm.
So number one, of course, I think like this is more on like a generic point of view, like, you know, like more number of units, more transactions, so it's easier for price to go up. But of course, this is still a secondary category. So the project must be at the correct pricing, because if the project is at the wrong pricing, there is no point.
In the first place.
Meaning that the more number of units, right, it just means that more intense competition to end up at. And the other caveat is that, like, we are not saying that projects of smaller size are not investable. The approach is a bit different. So if you are looking for momentum investing, 3 to 5 exit plan, the right leasehold project with the good number of units will allow you that flexibility of exit. But let's say, for example, you are in legacy planning zone or you are looking at the en bloc lottery effect. Technically speaking, the right boutique project with units that I can triple in sizing will actually give you that potential of willing to hold for like, you know, like 10 to 15 years. And so I think it really depends on what stage of your investment journey are you at. Mm. Are you like a newbie or are you more advanced? So if you're more newbie, you can just, you know, like take the more newbie approach, right? If you're more advanced, then we can do more complicated strategies with you.
Yeah. The one that you all mentioned for boutique, I think there's also two categories. He mentioned about the en bloc one. En bloc ones are actually very interesting because there's a specific group of investors that are hunting for this kind of boutique. Large car park space, underutilized land. They are
big
really
size units.
For, yeah, and it's all. But you must be able to have that courage to go for it because the en bloc mindset is that if it doesn't happen, you must be willing to hold and the rental usually is lower. But of course, this other category is like new boutique ones. Yeah, so I think this is something to take note of as well.
I'm talking about the old money.
The old, yes.
Not the new money.
In fact, actually, I think the old boutique projects are fantastic because you look at last 2 years, all the en blocs are for these boutique ones.
Yeah. And the reason why is because developers take on much lesser risk. The quantum, like let's say like 300 million to 500 million in terms of land size is more easily digestible.
Yeah.
With the pending ABSD deadline, which is 5 years, no matter you are selling a 2000 project unit, you are selling like 10 units, you have that 5 year timeline.
Yeah.
And so from a developer standpoint, when market is more uncertain, they want to do safer bets. And that's why we see en blocs happening at like the smaller land sites actually.
Yeah.
Very hard to do the big land sites like you know, like the HUD shit that time, like Florence Residences, you know, like, okay. Yeah. So like last few years, like Ivory Heights, Bradley View, Laguna Park, these are one of the last three of the HUDC. But the land size is huge.
I think you need 4 developers.
To
go together. Yeah.
But something very interesting, like for this year, I think like some of these smaller project size, right?
Start to make sense.
It's their time to appreciate really.
Yeah. I think once every 10 years.
Because the gap of like the counterparts of big projects, right, has gone up so much that now it makes sense.
Yes. Actually,
so very interesting this year.
I realized like boutique projects such as those in like Balestier or Telok Kurau area, they will move right when the market is bullish, because the rest of the project prices start to move because of volume effect. Yeah. And then these smaller brothers over there, of course, they are still in very good location, because if you take a look at Telok Kurau, Marine Parade, Amber area, fantastic location. But if you move to Telok Kurau area, it's actually not too bad because you have the MRT station, you have the schools, you have Taonan, CHI, Katong, all over there within 1 km.
The right lane, the right lane.
Correct, the right lane. And they are still in the east and they are still part of the D15 area. And then right now, right, because the rest of the other prices starts to move up. And this is what exactly some of the buyers on the ground, they say. They say, I don't mind, I want to move into the ground because right now the pricing makes sense.
Yeah.
And that is the next better option that I can buy it to ready.
So actually my mind space and my advice to my clients is always that there's nothing wrong buying boutique projects. If you enjoy privacy, you don't want to be in such a crowded project, you really love like low density living.
Don't need so many facilities.
You want to be a landed enclave. Yep. You're okay with that. Then of course, by all means, go ahead and it's your own stay and thing. But but for investment, I think it's very clear. I will always share with them that investment, you really have to look at that mode analysis, go for the bigger ones. Okay, but I think the summation is that boutique projects move when everyone else has moved.
Mm.
Yeah, because it's a substitutional effect.
But I think it's also how like, you know, like developers are building like boutique projects. If you look at, let's say like, US city, let's for example, like you say like New York City, right? I think like there are a lot of boutique projects, right, that does extremely well. And if you do like boutique projects, right, there must be a clear difference. There must be a clear concept, a clear differentiation.
There must be a concept.
And like for example, like super high ceiling height, super spacious, or you have like nice concierge, like private lift, etc.
You just don't see that in Singapore.
You don't see that. So if let's say I'm just buying a mini size project, then
it's the same. It looks the same.
Like, so hence, you know, like the differentiation is not there. But if you've got a good differentiation, you're going to attract, right, all the more lux buyers, because what they want is privacy.
I would say the smaller projects, right, the micro factors becomes very, very apparent. then they will start to see whether, is there things like unblocked view, are my neighbors peering into it, got bay window, floor plan layout. Mm-hmm. I think all this becomes very, very apparent.
Okay, really. George Kyle, what's the deck?
What's the deck?
PRB build. Our audacious goal to become a developer.
All right, man. But I don't have the deck.
We all developers go through a phase of being a landed developer, then boutique project developer, then mega size.
Yeah. Oh my god, we should play
the player.
Then you add out the effect.
Okay, you choose the effect.
I just talk about pricing. Inherent factors cannot be changed. Mm. Value add elements can be changed. In a house, the only thing you can change is the renovation.
Yeah.
Mm. And the people staying home.
You can change the human being.
Change the human if they don't add value.